worst Christmas.
About the worst Christmas. Dad had the flu, and he hadn't been able to go to work for a week, so he didn't have his check. And we had some ducks, and Dorothy and I took them up to this little grocery store and sold them and got the few things that Mama wanted. And Uncle Melvin and Aunt Doris came over Christmas Day and brought candy for the little kids.
Is that when Mom lost her purse?
Yeah.
The purse was stolen.
Yeah. And
her purse was stolen. What she had left in there after she'd paid the bills and bought groceries, she was going to buy some oranges and some candy and some nuts for you girls. And had her purse stolen on her.
Is that when you and Dad were sick?
Yeah. Yes. And Dorothy went with me to take the ducks, but she immediately after that became sick. And she was unconscious on Christmas Day, and Daddy mm-hmm. was unconscious. And Mom and I just sort of moped around. And then Aunt Doris and Uncle Melvin came over, and we had dinner. I think we had chicken or something.
We had duck. We had one of the ducks.
One of the ducks, maybe. And entertained you girls so that you were not conscious of how grim it was.
I remember another kind of empty Christmas. I don't remember at all that we felt badly that we didn't get things. I don't remember that at all, but I remember that Daddy, there was a strike on, mm-hmm. and I can remember that we did go shopping, but we couldn't buy things, and yet I think that was the Christmas that we took something down to the Earns family because they were worse off. And I remember we took some little gifts or something. I think that was when they didn't have a dad.
Their dad was in prison.
Yeah. And so I remember we walked down and took things to them. But I don't remember feeling that we didn't have a good Christmas. Do you, Marge?
Just that one where I got that stick and a piece of coal in my sock.
Oh, you did?
I didn't realize that. What did you do?
Well, I must have been a rotten kid. I don't know, but Santa left me a stick and a piece of coal.
The big kid did it, and we felt like so high because we had hurt her feelings, so she really cried.
Oh, man. So did you end up giving her some candy or something?
Yeah,
she
got her sock, her right sock.
Mother really scolded us for that because she didn't know that
they
we did
it.
She
was going to do it.
She'd been kind of a...
She was ornery.
Ornery. And we kept telling her, if you don't straighten up, Santa's going to bring you a stick and a piece of coal. Well...
Sure enough.
I
guess I was testing him.
Mother would spank her, and she'd have a little switch, and Marge would just run around Mother, and the switch would just miss her bottom every time.
Yeah, Dad would get a hold of me and quit me like that.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't see no sense in, standing
still.
No, Marge and I both learned to outrun the whip pretty
well. Yeah.
Except with Dad. I don't know that we could do it too much with Dad.
Oh, I used to do it with Dad, and the girls used to laugh, and then make him mad because the girls were laughing because I was running around. I ran around in a circle.
Well, I know we did it with Mama, and she never could keep up with us.
They were talking about Dad with a switch. I remember that big ham of a hand whacking me on the bottom a few times, and I'll tell you, it stung. He had a big hand, but they were loving hands, too. He could dish out the punishment, but he also did it in love. And I remember one time, it was during the Depression, and Daddy and I were talking. No, this was many years afterwards. This was, after I was married. And Daddy and I were talking, and he said, I wanted you to be a doctor. And I said, well, Daddy, I never knew that. And he said, well, I knew I didn't have the money to send you to school. And he said, there wasn't any use saying anything about it. He said, I regret that I couldn't give you girls all the things that I'd like to. And I said, Daddy, you did. I said, there was only one thing that I can remember growing up that I didn't like. And he said, what was that? And I said, well, you would buy old, oily machine belts from the shop, and you would put soles on my shoes. And I just thought that was the most horrible thing. He said, well, I had to do it. I said, oh, I know that now. But I said, as far as, he said, well, you didn't have all the food. I said, Daddy, we never lacked for food. We never lacked for a house to live in. We never lacked for clothes. Maybe they were secondhand clothes, but Mama would make them over. And I said, we never went barefooted. I said, and we never lacked love. Daddy had lots of that.
That's right. Let me just interject some of my thoughts about Dad. I think Daddy and I had a kind of a special bond. Mother and I were close, but Daddy and I had more of a spiritual bond because Mother wasn't very expressive and about her faith, and she was the one that worried so about everything, worried about Daddy tithing, but Daddy was committed to giving the first fruits and knew that the Lord would take care of us, and Mama always worried whether or not we'd have enough left over. But I can remember just feeling very close to Dad, and then I can remember one Christmas going shopping in the evening with Mother and Dad, and I was in the back seat, and I reached around in the packages, you know, and I said, oh, which one of the girls did you get this purse for? And there was just silence. And I thought, oh, I've really done it. Daddy didn't say anything. And when we got home, he handed me the package, and he said, you might as well give it to her, to Mama. And boy, I was so crushed, I could hardly stand it, because whenever I knew I hurt Dad, I could hardly stand it. And I didn't know, I knew I'd cry if I tried to talk to him, and in that little house there wasn't really room to talk privately. And so I would wait. Of course, he always went to bed pretty early because he had to get up so early. I would wait till he went to bed, and then I'd write him a note and put it on the breakfast table and tell him how sorry I was. And in the morning when I got up, the first thing I did was go and look and see if my note was gone. And there never was a word about it. Daddy never said, I got your note. Nothing. But all was well, and I knew that we were back in fellowship. And that is one of the sweetest memories I have of him. And another really special memory to me is in that house on Burnell, you know, where I used to sleep on the day bed, usually it was where I could look right out into the kitchen. And about 4:30 in the morning, I'd wake up and smell the coffee, and I'd look out and I'd see my dad pouring over the Word of God and using, you know, whispering the words, moving his lips. And, of course, at that time, and I could hear his coffee perking, you know, while his coffee perked, he read the Word of God. And at that time, I just thought, that's Daddy. But when I grew up and began trying to have a faithful, quiet time alone with God myself every day, I knew that it was a struggle. I knew that it was a sacrifice for him to do that, that it meant getting up earlier and so on. And that's one of the sweetest memories I have of my dad, and his gentleness, his love. And then I think about how, you know, he and Mom took us to church, I guess, from the time we were in cradle roll. And that made it possible. I mean, he made it possible for Margie and I to go to the meetings of Helen Stevens, so that was when we made our decision to accept Christ. And that is, you know, I don't remember a lot of things about those. That I was about 6 and a half, and I don't remember a lot of things before that. But that is as crystal clear to me as anything. And I remember there were two boys from another family, Margie and me. We sat around a little primary table, and Helen Stevens got a lump of coal out of the coal bin to illustrate to us how our hearts were made dirty with sin, but that when Jesus came in, he cleansed them and made them all clean. And it's interesting to me that I remember so little of other details, and yet that one thing is so clear. And I remember when Daddy came down the stairs there at 3rd Avenue and to get us, and of course we were late from the after, it was an after school meeting apparently, or
I think it was on Sunday. And he, her dad had the meetings in upstairs, and she had the meetings downstairs for us little kids.
We were in the auditorium, and she said, if any of you...
No, we wouldn't have been in the auditorium sitting around a little table.
No, let me tell it. We were in the auditorium, a whole bunch of kids, and she gave the gospel, and she said, now, if any of you want to accept Christ, you come downstairs with me afterwards. And so we went downstairs, the four of us, and sat around that table. And Daddy came down the stairs, and I can remember taking his hand at the bottom of the stairs and real excitedly telling him why we were late, that we had asked Jesus to come into our hearts.
We were baptized together, too.
And then, Marge, a little later, I think I was seven by that time, and we were in that room, as you come up the stairs in Third Avenue, that little right room, and we were discussing it with somebody. I don't know if it was Daddy or what. And Marge was quiet as usual, and I was crying, being the emotional one. And I just couldn't, I don't know if I couldn't make up my mind or if I was scared or, do you remember, Marge?
No.
But anyway, we ended up being baptized then together. And of course, you all know that then later, 17 years later, I had the privilege of meeting Helen Stevens in Colorado and have been close to her ever since. But, you know, the reason that we were able to accept the Lord as children is because our parents got us there to be exposed to the gospel. And that has meant so much to me. And then another precious memory of Daddy is during his latter years when he was so sick and hurt so badly. And I remember talking to him on one of my visits home and saying, well, Daddy, I just, you know, you never complain. And your love for the Lord is so obvious. And he said, well, I just love him, and I'm not ashamed to tell about him. And I remember visiting him in the hospital during those latter days before he died. And when his food came, he bowed his head and moved his lips in prayer. And then you could tell, and of course he was in and out at that time, but he just kept on praying. And I thought, you know, he is just enjoying fellowship with the Lord. He's already said his prayer for the meal, but he just kept on. And that really touched my heart. And so I have so many precious memories of Daddy and his love and kindness to us and his laughter. Another thing that means a great deal to me was during those latter days of his illness when he got too sick to stand at the door. And he took that job of greeting people at the door and handing out the bulletin as serious as the preacher preaching a sermon. And it is.
And he took the boots off the children. They came in.
Helped the older ladies up the steps.
Mm-hmm. And he took that very seriously. That was his service unto the Lord. And of course, he helped build the church after work, after he'd worked hard all day at the factory. But the thing I remember then is that even when he got so sick he couldn't stand, they took the rocking chair out of the nursery and let him sit down at the door and hand out the bulletins and greet the people. And I guess he did that until he was hospitalized. And that was such a precious memory to me to see how he loved the Lord. And I am convinced that in heaven he's going to be one of the ones with the starriest crown. Not that the world would ever know about William K. Fuller, but we knew. And the people who knew him knew that he loved the Lord. And I'm sure that the Lord loved the way he served him, because he did it with such a whole heart
and a humbleness
and a very great humbleness.
Going back to I lost my train of thought. Pause it there a minute, like,
okay.
Going back to Irma saying that mother didn't teach us, she was always willing to do it herself. Well, I didn't care if I learned anything in the house or not. I would much rather be out with Daddy working on the car or climbing up on the roof, putting a new roof on, or helping Daddy in the garden or mowing the lawn. That was much, much more important to me than learning to cook. But down the line, after I got married, I had to learn to do a lot of that kind of stuff. So, and then back to when Daddy was so sick, Arlene stayed over there with him at night after Mom was, when Mom was in the hospital. We didn't leave Daddy alone, and she stayed over there, and she had to get up real early to go to work, and she heard, like, Daddy, someone talking, and she thought, is Daddy, is Grandpa real bad, and I didn't know about it? Well, then she stopped and listened, and Grandpa was, or Daddy was praying for each member of his family, every one of us. Children, sons, grandchildren, sons-in-laws, the whole family. He was praying for each of them. And Daddy had a nice philosophy. He didn't worry about something he couldn't have. And I know one day when I was in the hospital with him, he said, I'd like to go home, but I know I can't. And he never seemed to regret it, or never seemed to, you know, he never moaned about it or never fussy about it or anything. He just he accepted it. That was the way the Lord wanted him to do. And
like I say, I think there'll be three crowns in heaven for our dad. And I want to say this about Mom. I think it's unusual for a person to grow spiritually as they get older if they haven't in their younger life. And I think Mama lived up to all the light she had. But after Daddy was gone, it seemed to me that she began to grow more spiritually. I think she began to read her Bible more. And
she put her tithe in.
Uh-huh. And I think that's just, that probably had a lot to do with Daddy's life too. Uh-huh. You know, being an example to her. And but Mama was a wonderful mother to us, and I don't think I was bad as a teenager. I was just thoughtless, and that was the time when she had menopause, and remember her hands used to itch. She would go like this, you know, between her fingers, and she would have hot flashes, and I'm sure Margie and I just were awful during those times. You know, just thoughtless. I mean, it.
You weren't being mean.
It was just teenage thoughtlessness, but I've often thought that at least I made it much harder for her during those times, just because I was totally thoughtless of her and so wrapped up in my own world, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'd go out to Grandma Mac's. The ladies' aid would have ice cream socials, and we kids would go down to the hall and help them turn the ice. They didn't have electric ice cream freezers. You had to turn them by hand. And we'd go down and we'd turn these freezers and turn them and turn them. And sometimes one of us would sit on the top of it so that the other one could turn it because they were getting so hard to turn. And then the ladies would take the paddles out and pack the ice cream so it would hold. And we got to lick the paddles. And we thought we had something good. And what was the other there you were talking about? When Mama was going to have Margie, Aunt Doris took me home with her. And, this was after Margie was born.
Mom had a facial stroke.
Yeah, Mom had, well, she'd had a stroke before you were born, and then she had another one. And,
I didn't know that she actually had a stroke.
Well, it was Bell's palsy, uh-huh. Uh-huh. But it is a stroke.
Yeah.
And, they didn't even think Mom was going to live. And all the brothers and sisters came, then when, after Margie was born, and she was blue, she was a blue baby, and we didn't think she would live. Well, Aunt Doris and Uncle Melvin took me home with them, and they had a big police dog, and he had a big, big dog house. And Aunt Doris's niece, Doris, was there, and we'd play house in the dog house. It was as clean as Aunt Doris's house, and we'd play house of that. And then later on, when Margie was about, 6 or 7 months old, we lived on the north side of Flint. And Daddy was driving a truck from Chevrolet in Flint to the Chevrolet plant in Saginaw. of course, often he was late. And this particular night, it was in the wintertime, and it was cold, and there was snow on the ground. I was holding Margie to feed her, and she strangled real bad quite often when she was taking her bottle. Well, this particular time, she really strangled, and she turned blue, and Mom, we had a neighbor lived kitty-cornered across the street, and then Mom said, go get Emmeline. Well, I didn't have shoes or socks on, didn't have my coat or anything. I took off and run across the road.
Winter.
It was winter. There was snow on the ground, and I didn't stop to knock or anything. I just ran to the door. I said, Emmeline, Mom needs you. Margie's choking. And Albert said, where's your shoes? I said, I don't know. And I turned around and run back. Well, by that time, Margie was all right, but Albert said, that kid's going to catch her death of pneumonia. But you know, I didn't. I didn't even catch a cold.
Mom turned her upside down.
Mom turned her upside down,
and she
patted her.
Patted her and reached inside her mouth. And
I just knew I'd killed my baby sister. I just knew it.
If this sounds kind of choppy, it's because we're trying to pick up notes that we've written and we're trying to get memories down. So just bear with us if we jump from one thing to another.
When we lived in St. John's,
yeah.
Saturday night was a big gathering. Everybody went to town on Saturday night, and the folks would go. Audrey and Mom would walk with Audrey, and they had me in the buggy. And if Dad didn't put one wheel off the sidewalk, bump along, I'd ball my head off. And Mother would say, Will, put that buggy back up on the sidewalk. People will think you're crazy. Well, Daddy would put it up on the sidewalk, and I'd start blatting again. So I was really a bad baby.
I think you were a bad kid.
Yeah, I was
a bad baby. They didn't tell me.
Yeah.
If someone had explained to me I was going to have a baby, if somebody had told me that it would be nice, I might have welcomed her a little better.
She didn't love me.
But they took me to Aunt Laurie's and didn't tell me anything, didn't tell me a thing. And when Dad come to get me about 2 days later, Aunt Laurie had given me a whole bunch of velvet pieces. And I was so thrilled with those velvet pieces. And I was wanted to tell Mother that we'd make a pincushion. I don't think I could sew then, but I thought I could. And they took me in, and Mom is in bed. And here is this bundle that just cried so loud. And it seemed like she had to be fed every time it was time for my dinner. And we had a wooden cook stove. And Mother always cooked enough potatoes at night so there was potatoes for breakfast or lunch. And one time I got so disgusted that I found a pan and warmed some potatoes up for myself, which neither Mother or Dad appreciated.
You were only 5 years old, weren't you?
Yeah. And they, so it wasn't very friendly with Dorothy, but I feel now that she must have maybe even had stomach trouble then. And the only way she got over the colic was they found Eagle Brand.
Huh.
And they gave her Evgo brand, and she seemed to be able to tolerate that.
Huh.
And
that's strong stuff. Mm-hmm, it's the same Evgo
brand. Yeah, it was the same. Only I think
they
made a formula of it.
Yeah.
Would take me on Saturday morning. We would go to town too, and Dad would talk to all the farmers he knew and everybody. And we'd walk around, and then when it was almost lunchtime, we'd start home and. There was a butcher shop there that made their bologna. And Dad would buy me a ring of bologna and let me carry it. And I've loved bologna. But you can't find any that tastes like that.
Yeah.
Or Mama would make a round steak, and she had an iron frying pan. And that was the best taste in steak, and you can't find any that tastes like what she would make. And I don't suppose she did anything special to it, but that's one of my happy memories of food.
Well, let me just interject a little bit about food here.
I don't remember that we ever got to eat out. And I do remember that Mama and I were in Woolworth's, or it might have been Kresge's, one of those, and they had you stood up to the counter and had a hot dog. And I remember Mama getting a hot dog and probably sharing it with me. And when I was, I was in high school, I went to work at the home, before that, I was cleaning houses. And did I clean house for Dr. Cunningham, or did, who am I thinking of? I think it was a doctor. Must have been Cunningham. Anyway, I cleaned house for somebody on a Saturday, and this lady paid me, but she also, one Saturday, took me, because I'd always go downtown. I think I made $2 for the whole day work, you know. And I'd go downtown, and I'd go to the Capitol or the Palace Theater, and I'd, spend my money on that. And on, I remember for Mother's Day one time, I bought a beautiful bowl at the china closet and broke it before I got home for Mother. But anyway, on this particular day, whoever it was, took me to the home dairy. And you remember it was upstairs, and it was old wood floor. But to me, that was the most wonderful thing in the world, that this lady paid me and actually took me to lunch. I just thought that was marvelous. And then later, I worked there. And I realize now it was a pretty homely place, you know. But we never got to eat out.
No.
And one of the great joys of my life now is still the ability to take people out to lunch or to dinner. Because that's such a treat for me to be able to do that, because it was, when I was in college, you know, I never got to do it unless somebody took us. So that was a special treat for me.
Remember,
did I get you a job at the home dairy?
I lasted a week, and it made you so mad because you told him what a good worker I'd be.
And I just lasted a week.
Couldn't take it, huh?
Well, no, because I had to stand there and holler in the order, and I couldn't do that. That just about killed me, so I quit. He was pretty mad at me.
I do remember that there were two twins that worked there, and they really looked alike. They must have been identical, and they would tell us how, you know, boyfriends couldn't tell them apart, so if one of them didn't want to go, she'd send the other one, and the boys never knew the difference.
When Audrey was, it was after she graduated, she worked for the place, it was called the King's Daughters Home. It was an orphanage. And I was about 13. And I went down there. She told me to come down. Dad took me down there, and I spent the night with him. Well, that was the first time that I ever had green or black tea. At home, we always drank green tea. And I thought that was... The girls had some kind of crackers and cookies, and they had this black tea, and I just thought that was wonderful. And they invited me to spend the night with them. I don't remember this, but I remember them telling about it, that I loved to play in the water. And one day, Mother caught me in the sink with the water running, with my shoes and socks on. As has been stated before, I was quite a character.
Okay. When I first went to work, I made $3 a week. And I thought I was really some pumpkins if I could bring Mama home a pound of butter. And when Christmas came, I saved my money up. Maybe I put them in layaway, but I bought the girls' dolls. So then I felt real big, too, that I had... been able to get them a nice doll, a Shirley Temple doll and a Effna B doll, which Irma still has.
Got me a baby doll.
And I got you a baby doll. And then I made clothes for them. By that time, Mom trusted me with scissors, but when I was younger, she never allowed me to cut because I cut the tail out of Dad's shirt to make his white shirt. To make doll clothes, so after that, the scissors, so I had to just drape my dolls. But Mother was a good sewer. She could. She took the year Irma was born. I was going to be in the ninth grade and have to go to Flushing High School. So she went to the Goodwill and she bought a big fuzzy coat, kind of curly material. She took it all apart. She washed it very carefully. Then she made me a jacket and a tam and a muff. And so that's what I started school with, and I really thought that was that I was really well-dressed. Mm-hmm. And she could make dresses, and in fact, she made your graduation dresses. They weren't bought.
I remember, too, I don't remember the occasion, Marge, but she made us beautiful chintz jumpers. Do you remember that? Flowered chintz jumpers,
yes.
And I just thought they were the most beautiful things. That I'd ever seen.
Oh, I don't know what it was about.
We lived out on Grandpa Fuller's place. After he died, we lived there for a while, and Grandpa had an old horse called Flossie. And we would, Audrey would lead the horse around, and I was riding the horse. And if you went anywhere near the barn, and the door was open, old Flossie would go in the barn. And of course, Audrey got tired of walking around with me, so she took the horse around by the barn. And old Flossie scraped me right off onto the ground. And one time when Dad was driving a truck between St. John's and Flint, the roads were so bad that he took a horse blanket that he used to wrap his feet in because there wasn't any heat in the truck. He took that and would lay it down in front of the truck and go as far as that blanket would go, and then he would pick it up again and go up, and put it ahead of him again, and that's the way he got up a hill. And that was years before the main road was paved. And in the springtime, there was one place that evidently had springs underneath it or something, because it was always very, very wet. And of course, the traffic going through there, the trucks and stuff, you know, they cut it down, they cut some ruts pretty deep. And Dad was helping getting cars through there. And there was a lady came, and they told her, when we get you started, don't stop. And said, keep a steady pace. Well, Dad said they got her started, and she floorboarded it. He said she slung mud every which way. This same time, about the same time when Daddy would be driving through there, there was a farmer had pigs, and he let them run. And there was, six or eight of them on one side of the road. And then they decided they were going to go across the road to the farm. And they all went across real good, except one. And that one didn't pay any attention to the other ones. And all of a sudden, just about the time Dad's up there, this pig runs out in front of Dad. Dad had a big truck loaded with castings. It was a big real truck. It was loaded. It was heavy. And he hit that pig and knocked the front end right out from under the truck, knocked the wheels right off it. And the pig got up and went home.
We're backing up again here.
There was a country school across the road from Grandma's property, and
Grandma Mac.
Yeah, and there was all of the cousins went to school there, and I got the privilege of going. And there was my uncle's initials carved in some of the desks. So they had gone to school in this same school and sat at these same desks. And I don't know whether I appreciated it then, but now I think of it sometimes that the generations that went to school there, because all of my Uncle Will's children, and then Paul and Carol, and me, I was there for
some of them.
Oh yeah, and Aunt Wilmy's children. I forget about her living out there. And we all went to school. They didn't have any seventh grade English, so I had eighth grade. My education was kind of spotty. I had eighth grade English when I was in the seventh grade. And that was the year that Dad lost his job in October or early November. They just didn't have any work. It was the Depression. So we went to Grandpa and Grandma's, and then Dad decided in November that maybe he communicated with Uncle Oscar. Uncle Oscar had a farm.
Uncle Oscar is Dad's brother,
and he had a farm up near Wolverine. And so he told Dad that Dad could work for him for our room and board. So we went up there and spent one Christmas and Thanksgiving and everything with them. His wife was kind of funny, but we had a good time up there. And we stayed until after Christmas. And then we went back to Grandpa Max. And Dad got called back to work. Well, they had to come to Flint and find a place to live and a school and everything. So they took Dorothy with them, but they left me there on the farm for several months. It was getting warm, getting spring by the time they came in to get me. And so I went to school at that school with my cousins. And Gaylord threw something. To back up a little bit, when Dorothy was little, Dad had hurt his foot or his leg or something, so he had a cane. And it was in the attic, and she and I were up there playing. And maybe she didn't even intend to do it. Of course, I thought she did. She whopped me across the nose and broke my nose. So I couldn't stand anybody throwing anything at me because I couldn't catch it. And it would hit my nose. So Gaylord threw a paper wad with something hard inside of it.
Probably a stone or something.
And hit my nose, and I passed right out. So the teacher sent me home, and Grandpa couldn't understand why I would faint if somebody hit my nose. But Grandma, she kind of made it straight and let me stay home. But now the same thing happened when I was in high school. I was in homeroom, study hall, and one of the boys threw something that hit my nose, and I just went over the table. And the teachers couldn't understand that either. They thought that was kind of that I was putting on, that I didn't really faint, but I really did.
This reminds me of Margie's and my early days in school. We were in Flint by this time, and Margie and I went to a little two-room schoolhouse all the way through sixth grade, kindergarten to sixth grade.
I didn't. You might have.
Oh, No, I'm sorry. Third grade, sorry. And I remember that I believe Audrey or Dorothy one was sent to... See? Put a raincoat around me because it was raining so hard, and I did not want to wear this. It must have been Daddy's raincoat or something, and I did not want to wear this big raincoat. I was really embarrassed. And I remember too that the Coggins brothers were there, and in this family these were our neighbors, and there were four boys. One was brilliant and three were, what would you say, imbeciles or
Mentally handicapped.
And we have several stories that we remember about them, but I do remember that particular day. They were big, big boys, but they were there in that little school for the kindergarten to third grade. And one thing I remember about the boy named Bob, who was, of course, by now a big man, but none of us were afraid of them. They were just neighborhood boys, and we would get disgusted with them sometimes, but we also just played with them. And Bob would, Daddy had a garden half a block from our house there on the corner, and he was working in the garden, and I believe it was potato plants, and he would say to Bob, "Bob, don't step on the potato plants." And he'd say, "I won't, Mr. Fuller, I won't, Mr. Fuller, I won't." But he'd be plopping right down, one foot after the other, on the potato plants. And Jack was the religious one. And Jack went to all the Youth for Christ meetings, and he usually would speak out. And he had enough sense to ride the bus and know where to get off. And he used to be walking down our road, and he'd put his hands behind him and shake his hands and do a little, kind of a little dance forward.
Turn around.
And I don't remember a whole lot about Raymond, but I think it was, what was the middle one's son again? The name again?
It was Norman.
No.
He was the oldest.
He was the oldest.
Norman, Jack, Bob.
I think it was Bob that used to play ball with us, wasn't it?
Yeah, Raymond did too.
Did Raymond? And if they ever connected with the ball, they hit it from now to kingdoms come. And we'd say, run, Bob, run. But we never put them down, I don't remember. We just accepted them as part of the neighborhood. And
we used to run for them sometimes.
Yeah, did we?
We'd hit the ball and we'd run.
And those were, you know, I just think of how much fun we had and how simple our life was. There was a vacant lot two doors down, I believe, and we played sandlot baseball there. And every night in the summer, after, I don't know, till it got dark, we'd be down there playing either kick the can or a softball. And we had such fun. Life was very simple and very wonderful for us. And again, we were poor. But the only thing I knew at that time, I did know that, you know, like I was telling Marge and Dorothy on the way up, that I felt like the people at church who lived in town and had indoor toilets were so much better off than we did. And I was always so embarrassed to bring anybody to our house, like to stay overnight, because we didn't have indoor plumbing. And I forget what I was going to say. What was I talking about? We were talking about that we didn't know we were poor. I remember something special at school. And I asked Daddy if I could get a dress. And I remember I found a dress at some kind of a dry goods store, not a regular department store, and I think it was $3. And I was worried because it was a black and yellow kind of a polka dot or something, and I had brown shoes. And that really bothered me that I didn't match, but I was glad I had that new dress. And I also realized in later life that as a teenager, I would ask Dad if I could have a quarter to go get a hamburger with the kids after church. And I didn't know until later that when he did that for me, it was part of his lunch money. That was all. I mean, he didn't have extra money to give to me. And, of course, at that age, it didn't even dawn on me what he was doing. But that was a sacrifice he made so I could have a hamburger with the kids.
Marge was in the third grade. She and I went to the same school. I was in the 11th grade, and it was in April, the 7th of April, and we went off to school in the morning very, very warm. We didn't even have a sweater on, and both of us had anklets on, and she got out of school about 3 o'clock, and I didn't get out till 3:30, and she, about 3:15, somebody came to the door and asked for me, and I went to see what they wanted, and they said, "Your little sister's downstairs just crying her eyes out." So I went downstairs, and I said, "What's the matter?" She says, "Well, look, it's snowing. How are we going to get home? Daddy won't be home. He can't come and get us." I said, "Dois, don't worry." I said, we'll get home." So I took her back up to the room with me till my class was dismissed. And we used to go cross lots to go home. We'd go kitty-cornered across the country, and I took her home. I took a hold of her hand, and I run her all the way home. And she said, when Daddy got home, she said, "Daddy, I didn't get cold, and my feet didn't even get wet." Daddy laughed. He said, "Well, your feet probably didn't touch."